You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
So it was today, ladies and gentlemen, that Nathan Bedford Forrest was reinterred again, this time at the Sons of Confederate Veterans headquarters at Elm Springs in Columbia, Tennessee. I had the opportunity on Thursday to go to Nathan Bedford Forrest's boyhood home in Chapel Hill, Tennessee, where he was laying in state with his wife at the visitation in advance of his reinterment. That was a most memorable day. As I said in the previous hour, we woke up very early. I took my entire family, my wife and our three children, and we woke up so we could get on the road. It was a three-hour drive, needed to get there and have some time to spend and reflect and visit before driving the 3 hours back and waking up at 5 o'clock in the next morning to get to the airport to go to Utah. And it was the fastest three-hour drive I think that I've ever had. From the time we got in the car until the time we pulled up at the boyhood home, I talked to my kids. Now, of course, I've talked to them for years about the South. That you can't give them everything. They are still young, but you don't have to talk down to them either. And I talked to them about the heroes of the Confederacy and why Forrest was a hero and why Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson and John Breckinridge and D.S. Job and all of these people are heroes. And I told them what the opposition says. They're going to be well equipped for all of it to make their own decisions. But we're going to pour a foundation of truth in that decision making that will go and come when their time comes as adults. But I came home later that night and found that my daughter had been writing the lyrics to Dixie in her room. She wasn't asked to do that. That wasn't an assignment. I went up there to tuck her into bed, and she had been writing the lyrics to Dixie on a piece of paper up in her room. Because, of course, we sang that on the way up there, and we listened to several different versions of it. We're going to be talking with Rich Hamblin, a good friend of mine, another fellow Tennessean, a man's man, Gene Andrews as well. Gene Andrews, the caretaker of the Forrest Boyhood Home and former division commander of the Sons of Confederate Veterans here in Tennessee. They're both coming up this hour. Dissident Mama, Rebecca Dillingham, was at the reinterment today in Columbia, Tennessee. She's going to tell us all about that as well. And yes, Rich actually informed me of another song about Forrest that I had never heard. We're going to play that this hour as well. But when I arrived at the Forrest Boyhood Home on Thursday morning, believe it or not, I had never been there before. I'd been to the grave in Memphis so many times, but never to the boyhood home, even though my good friend Gene Andrews had long served as the caretaker. I did not know it was on this bucolic 58 acres of rolling terrain with caves and sinkholes and woods and just a beautiful long gravel driveway that goes probably half a mile up to the cottage, the only structure still standing that Forrest actually lived at during his lifetime. The homes in Memphis and in Mississippi that he lived at have long since been torn down. When you arrive, there is a granite marker at the iron fence that reads Boyhood Home of Nathan Bedford Forrest, Lieutenant General, Confederate States of America. That's on one side of the entrance. And on the opposing side is a quote. He rode from here into the legend of the land. And how true is that? There are monuments on the property, beautiful monuments. One I took a picture of, and it has a Confederate soldier on top of the obelisk, and it reads, "This monument is dedicated to all the men that served under Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest during the War for Southern Independence." Beautiful little cottage. To know that he actually lived there, obviously, is remarkable, but to, after having visited the grave so many times, to actually stand in front of the casket that held his mortal remains, to be just right there, just, I mean, you could touch it, obviously. It's just like any other funeral you've ever been to. And there, General Forrest and his wife were there for you to pay your respects at this visitation in advance of the reinterment that took place today. Wow. I mean, that is a remarkable thing. And I know the point and sputter opposition that hates Bedford Forrest. I know what they're saying. Well, Fort Pillow and the Klan and all of this. Well, we know the Fort Pillow thing was just an entire Union propaganda. We know that the soldiers stationed there were leaving the fort, going out into rural western Tennessee and raping and robbing and pillaging and terrorizing the citizens there. We know that General Forrest was asked by the citizens of West Tennessee to come and do something about Fort Pillow, and he wrote a note that says, "I will tend to Fort Pillow." And he went there, and he gave them the opportunity to surrender. They didn't, or they did, and then they didn't. And it was a resounding Confederate victory. It was a battle. It was a battle during a war. And for all the people who say he's a war criminal, well, of course, the people who tried him for war crimes found him not guilty. Those who actually fought against him, who would have the most personal understanding of who Forrest was and perhaps the most reason to hate him because of how effective he was in stymieing the opposition, they found him not guilty. Even his mortal adversary, General Sherman, said he was the most remarkable person that the war produced. General Sherman, by the way, you know, for all the people who say that Forrest was a war criminal for defeating people in a battle during war, a legitimate battle, they have no unpleasantries to bestow upon General Forrest, who burned out women and children, completely defenseless populations. That's not a war criminal. Forrest defeating an enemy enemy force who was entrenched inside a fort, that's a war crime, I guess, according to them. Well, they don't know anything. They don't know anything. Their vocabulary doesn't exceed beyond the profane, and they, of course, have a second-grade public school education of history. So we dismiss all of that. Let's actually take you back to what people who did live then had to say. This is a firsthand account of a Confederate veteran reunion right after the death of Nathan Bedford Forrest. And this comes from the West Tennessee Historical Papers. And it reads, "I was up early the last day of the reunion, eager to see the parade. Main Street," talking about Main Street in Memphis, "was cleared. The sidewalks, the doors, the windows, and the roofs were crowded. But I managed to find a seat on the curb." Coming up on music, we're going to go to Rich Hamblin when we come back. I'm going to read, though, the rest of that report from that Confederate Veterans Reunion. And, well, we'll just put history into accord with the facts, as they say over at the Barnes Review. We'll talk more about the reinterment of General Forrest and what it was like to have been there next.
Hello, TPC family. It's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation also seeks to educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MERICA1ST.com, AmericaFirst.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I ask you, what is the KQ? You know, the kosher question. Most Americans will spend their entire lifetime purchasing food from the supermarkets while having no idea that almost every packaged food product on the grocery shelves is certified kosher. Indeed, the kosher question encompasses not only food and religion, but also affects our economics, politics, and our identity. In an effort to promote awareness to the kosher question, developers have published an app for your smartphone that features a database of food products that have not been kosher certified. The Kosher-tified app has prominent advertisement on TPC's homepage, or you can check out its website at thekosherquestion.com. With the cesspool of politics getting even deeper these days, why not leave the swamp and start eating in favor of your own interests? Check out thekosherquestion.com today and download the app.
Can a nation conceived in liberty carry its head high if it denies protection to the youngest and most vulnerable of its citizens? Can a country founded on God-given rights continue to thrive without understanding that life is a precious gift from our Creator? As a physician, I have looked into the eyes of one-pound babies. I have cradled their small bodies in the palm of one hand. I defy those who are careless, who would disregard life and look at these tiny little miracles and say, we're not going to protect that.
But I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
Like my father before me, I've overworked the land. And like my brother above me, who took a rebel stand, he was just 18, proud and brave. But a Yankee, a lady in his grave. And I swear by the mud below my feet, you can't.
All right, everybody. Welcome back as we talk about the reinterment of Nathan Bedford Forrest, what it was like to have been there at the visitation, what it was like to have been there today at the reinterment. I can't answer that one, but Rebecca Dillingham will in the next hour, but Rich Hamblin, Gene Andrews will be with me for the remainder of this hour. Before we go to Rich, though, I want to quickly read this. This was actually something that was at a Nathan Bedford Forrest exhibit in the Memphis Museum of Science and Natural History. That's been taken down now, of course. Now it's just Forrest Hate slave clan, this completely second grade, as I said, second grade public school history of the man. And by the way, give it all to me. Give it all to me. Give me the worst you can say about Forrest. He's still my hero. He's still a better man than any of his detractors. And I promise you, none of these people would have said anything to his face because he would have sawed him in half. But this is a firsthand accounting from someone who was at a reunion of Confederate veterans shortly after the passing of Nathan Bedford Forrest right here in Memphis, Tennessee. I was up the last day of the reunion, eager to see the parade. Main Street was cleared. The sidewalks, the doors, windows, and roofs were crowded, but I managed to find a seat on the curb. The crowd went wild with joy and frenzy when Forrest's cavalry came into view. Flanked on each side by handsome horsemen was the riderless horse of the late general. Then came his little grandson, who was seated gracefully on a spirited pony. Following the horse and the grandson came the faithful servant and personal slave of General Forrest. He was on foot and carried a live chicken in one hand and a skillet in the other. The people roared, and the rebel yells were louder for him than anyone else. It soon became evident that this former slave was not physically able to continue his march. A marshal blew his whistle, and the parade came to a standstill. The feeble colored man was put into a luxurious carriage. The old raiders sat gracefully on their steeds. Even those with white beards looked like knights of old and radiated an air of mystery and glamour. Now, that's the truth of what the relationships were really like back in those days, from firsthand accounting, the likes of which his detractors could never know. Now joining me, Rich Hamblin, who I had the opportunity to be with once again. Always a good time when we're with Rich and his lovely wife, Janice, at the visitation on Thursday at the Boyhood Home. Rich, I think, though, you may want to take a little bit different tack on this at first and just put the whole thing into perspective. Take it any which direction you'd like.
Okay, James. Good evening. I'm glad to be on here. It was a good occasion. I had a great time there. I saw a lot of my old friends, guys that have been with me in this struggle since the early 90s when I first joined the SCV, and we've been through a lot of stuff together, and it was a delight to see them, and again, it evokes some memories of times when we used to drag a cannon down on the Legislative Plaza on Forrest's birthday back in the 90s, and the times we went down to the Forrest Monument. I've been down there with you several times in Memphis before it was destroyed by greed and mendacity, and even took our South African friends down there. So it was a good time yesterday. The weather was decent. The only disappointing thing about it was that there weren't more people there. I'm guessing that maybe altogether there were probably at most 100. And you know, when you compare that to the crowds that were at Forrest's funeral in Memphis when he died in 1877. I understand there were like 5,000 blacks that attended his funeral. So it was a far cry from that, and a lot of factors for that, and it's kind of a sign of the times. We live in an age when, you know, the Levon Helm song by the band, the night they drove Old Dixie down, is appropriate because, I mean, we're more or less in retreat right now, and there's a few of us that are standing up, but by and large, when I look around, I don't, you know, we're all getting white-haired and gray-haired and stooped over, and it's like we're becoming a part of a forgotten era. But the Forrest Home, Boyhood Home, is a beautiful place. It's all due to the effort of Gene Andrews. He's been riding herd on that for as long as I can remember, and it's just a glorious place. If anybody that's near there has not been, they should take the time and come visit it. It's close to Murfreesboro, in Columbia, so it's right in Middle Tennessee. So it's a very beautiful place, and it's a fitting tribute to the general.
I had a great time being there with y'all, and of course being there with my family. I said as soon as I walked up, all of the troublemakers were clustered together. That would be you and Gene and your wife, and of course our dear friends Buddy and Patsy, and a couple of others. And there are two different factions within the Southern Preservation Movement, or the Confederate Preservation Movement, or whatever you want to call it. There's two different factions within the SCV. And this goes back to something that Stonewall Jackson said to Jeb Stuart, and that was that the government in Richmond is too timid to face realities. And I think that same could be said for their descendants who head up the SCV. Of course, we all know good people who have been members, or perhaps even still are members in some cases, of the SCV. I do appreciate the work that the SCV does with regards to maintaining Confederate cemeteries and things like that. But you made mention of the fact that there was a sparse crowd there. Now, for me, of course, that was somewhat enjoyable. It was a very nice, breezy day, relatively cool. And we had the opportunity to just walk right up to the casket and pay respects, and it was laid back and relaxed. But the entire South should have showed up for this in a very reverential way, and certainly many more would have if they had only known about it. It seems as though, even though we had Gene Andrews on a couple of times in the last couple of months to share information about how to register, this was all a very convoluted process. They even made mention of the fact that this was a private event, not public, even though people of the public could came. But the SCV itself went a long way to depress attendance on this, and I think, and you can feel free to agree or disagree with me, Rich, they were too scared to do it. They were too scared of negative press and negative comments on social media.
Well, it certainly wasn't in the spirit of General Forrest. I mean, he was, you know, he was a commander who led from the front and had 29 horses shot out from under him, while at the same time he killed 30 Yankees. So he said he always quipped that he was a horse ahead. It was certainly not his style. It was kind of, I won't say disrespectful, but it didn't do him any honor for it to be handled the way it did. I thought it would have been a wonderful opportunity for outreach. There are a lot of people in the South who aren't in the SCV and who have are fond of General Forrest. I mean, I was fortunate enough to be of school age during the centennial celebration of the war, and the times were all completely different back then. I mean, Confederate heroes were celebrated. The liberal rags that are published today were full of advertisements featuring General Forrest and other heroes of the Confederacy, and it was, you know, advertisers were not afraid to be linked to Old Bedford, and it was just, you know, it was a different, it was a completely different world, and something terrible has happened along the way, and unfortunately we're fighting a rear guard action now, and if something doesn't change soon, it's gonna completely disappear. I've been to places where this has happened, and we can talk about that in a little bit.
Well, we know Forrest's admonition was get there first with the most men. It would seem as though the leaders of the heritage organizations now's motto is duck and cover and hope nobody finds out what we're doing. But it was still an honor to be there. Obviously, my God, to pay the respects, to be there at a reinterment for a man like this, one of the South's greatest heroes and the greatest, perhaps the greatest warrior America itself has ever produced. Nathan Bedford Ford, we'll be right back.
Using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Space history made, and it ends safely as four civilians are back on Earth after a three-day trip into space aboard a SpaceX Crew Dragon capsule. One of the crew members, 38-year-old Jared Isaacman, he actually personally financed and arranged for this trip with SpaceX and Elon Musk. A few days ago before heading into space, he told CNN he didn't feel like he was under a lot of pressure, but he certainly knew they had to get it right.
This is a big responsibility, and we have to execute really well and get this right so that the door can stay open for all the other missions to follow.
And again, those four civilians who were flown into space a few days ago by SpaceX have splashed down safely tonight. And this is USA Radio News.
If you are trying to quit drinking or doing too many drugs, listen to me. You don't know me and we'll never meet. I had a problem like you once. I drank and used to party a little too much till it got out of control and almost ruined my life. I realized I needed help to fix my problem before it totally destroyed me. If you've tried to fix your drinking and drug problem and you know you can't do it alone, you need to call the National Treatment Advisors. They'll immerse you into a 30-day program to replace your old habits with new habits and totally change your life. And if you have PPO private health insurance, the entire program may be covered. Fix your problem right now before it gets any worse. Get clean. Call now and learn more.
800-844-1675. 800-844-1675. 800-844-1675. That's 800-844-1675.
Haitian migrants that are seeking to escape poverty, hunger, and a feeling of hopelessness in their home country said the U.S. plans to speedily send them home won't deter them, as thousands of people remained encamped on a Texas border after crossing from Mexico. USA Radio Network's Dan Naraki has more.
House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy is calling on the Biden administration to deploy the National Guard to the southern border to help deal with a surge of Haitian migrants. More than 11,000 people are gathered under a bridge outside of Del Rio, Texas. U.S. Customs and Border Patrol announced Friday evening that the Del Rio port of entry was being closed in response to the surge. Fox News reporting that the border checkpoints in the area have been closed as well. The agency says that trade and travel traffic has been rerouted to the Eagle Pass port of entry 57 miles away to help manage resources and keep the flow of legal traffic uninterrupted. From the USA Radio News Ohio Bureau, I'm Dan Naraki.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
The Giza Dream Sheets are the perfect companion to a My Pillow. The best thing you'll ever...
Here's to Forest from the brave Tennessee. Here's to Forest from the brave Tennessee. In our hearts he will triumph forever. Here's to Forest from the brave Tennessee. Straight went careering before him, expecting our rear to assail. But Forrest with his fair maiden pilot soon landed the robber in jail. Here's to Forrest from the brave Tennessee. Here's to Forrest from the brave Tennessee. In our hearts he will triumph forever. Here's to Forrest from the brave Tennessee.
I want to thank Rich Hamblin for introducing me to that song, even after all these years, just on Thursday, and what a song it is, and very fitting for the hero that he is, the hero that he was, and the hero that he always will be to those brave enough and smart enough to ferret out the truth. Got another man on the air with us right now, joining Rich Hamblin, Gene Andrews. My God, Gene's probably been the most interviewed guest of the year with all of this going on. He's always an annual mainstay, but certainly making more frequent appearances this year in light of the reinterment. Gene Andrews is the caretaker of the Nathan Bedford Forrest Boyhood Home and, of course, the former division commander of the Tennessee Division of the Sons of Confederate Veterans. Gene, had a great time with you on Thursday. Why don't you just pick it up from there and share with the audience what they missed if they weren't there with us.
Well, James, we were very honored to have you at the Forrest home. I'm glad you got to come by and see the house and the grounds and everything that the Sons of Confederate Veterans have done to save that home from just total destruction. When we acquired the property back in 1997, that house was just about gone. The tin roof had blown back, and water was pouring in. All the windows had been broken out, and weeds and trees had grown up around it. The state had just given up on a project of restoring it. They had it first. And bought it in 1972 and started to restore it, and then they just quit, bailed out on it because political correctness scared them away from it. So the SCV got it and has been working on it ever since. Then, and this past week, the caskets containing General Nathan Bedford Forrest and his wife Marianne Montgomery Forrest were brought up from a funeral home in northern Mississippi. Were brought to the Forrest Boyhood Home just outside of Chapel Hill in Middle Tennessee, and they were carried up the driveway. Our home is about 0.5 miles from the main road, and there's a driveway that covers that distance up to the house. And so the cavalry reenactors from the 7th Tennessee Cavalry met them down at the main road when they pulled off the road, and escorted the two hearses up the driveway to within about, 40, 50 yards of the home itself. And then each hearse pulled off the road, and the rest of the driveway was lined with infantry reenactors on one side and cavalry reenactors on the other side. And this was pretty cool, I thought, the way they did it. The first six would take a coffin out of the hearse, and they brought Marianne Montgomery Forrest in first. Took her casket, and they carried it about 10 yards, and they set it down on one of those portable gurneys, and then another six would step up and carry it another 10 or 15 yards and set it down, and then another six. So there were quite a few people that got to actually carry the caskets from the driveway area all the way up to the house, up on the porch, and into the room that was being used for viewing for these two caskets. And then once they got her casket put in place, they repeated the same procedure with General Forrest's casket. And then I don't mind admitting that was a very, very emotional situation. I was so honored to be allowed to participate in that and actually touch and help pick up the casket of Lieutenant General Nathan Bedford Forrest, Confederate States of America. And
that is an incredible.
To see that.
Wait, it was incredible just to stand before.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, Gene. Well, I was just going to say, just to stand before it meant so much to me. But you are a guy, you are the guy who has spent so much blood, sweat, and tears out there caring for that land, that 58 acres and the house for all of these years, and to be able to bring the hero back. And as it says at the gate, he rode from here into the legend of the land, to actually be able to put hand on his casket, carry it back into the house one last time, the only house still standing that he actually lived in during his life. Yeah. I can't imagine what that would be like for anybody, but especially for you who has maintained that property.
And I'm not
please tell us a little more.
I got very emotional about that, and I saw these boys in the gray butternut Confederate uniforms carrying that casket up a slight hill toward the house. And just to be kind of overwhelmed by the situation that you were in, and to go back and think how many times I'd been stung by the wasp up on the roof or stabbed with a stick or something and bleeding and falling off the roof of the house and being bitten by a spider and breaking out rock and having a sliver of rock hit you in the leg and all the things we've gone through out there to bring that to the property around and the house and protect it and keep it maintained. And then here you are with General Forrest actually coming home. It seemed like it made whatever happened very minor and very much worthwhile. So it was quite an experience. I will admit that. Now
it was quite an experience for me.
Go ahead. Yes, sir.
Just to have been there, it pales in comparison. It's not even filthy rags compared to what it would have been like for you. And if you want to see what this boyhood home looks like, we talk about it all the time, or every time Gene's on anyway, go to our Twitter account, at James Edwards TPC. There I have posted some pictures from the day. There is a picture from an article in the Tennessean a few years back of Gene standing in front of the home and a picture of the home itself and some of the other monuments on the properties. Of course, we didn't take pictures of the caskets. We wouldn't do that. But there are some great pictures of the house and of Gene and some other things on the property at James Edwards TPC. Now, in the next segment, we're going to bring Rich Hamblin back, and he's going to join this conversation as we take it to the house. Then we're going to go to Rebecca Dillingham, who was actually at the reinterment at Elm Springs in Columbia today. We'll hear what she saw on the ground there in the next segment.
Yes,
but Gene, about a minute or two remaining.
That was quite an honor. She came over to the home today, wanted to see it and take a tour. And she came over there with her boys, and just a beautiful woman and a great, great Southern patriot. And that was another honor, talked to her, and we'd done the podcast, but I had never had a chance to meet her in person. And I understand she's going to be on your program in the next segment. And she is just really great, and that was another honor. There were so many great things that happened this weekend, and finally getting a chance to meet her in person. So that was really great. So a lot of good things happened this week.
I did not know that. I'm learning here with the rest because we, of course, were up there on Thursday, and I had to fly in the car back to Memphis on Thursday for a flight out early morning yesterday to Utah. And so I did not know that she actually – I had not heard that yet, that y'all got together at the boyhood home. Just today, you say.
I got back home, and there was a call there, and I returned the call to her, and she said she wanted to come out today after the funeral service over there at Elm Springs. Now, the boyhood home and the Sons of Confederate Veterans headquarters at Elm Springs, the antebellum home in Columbia, Tennessee, are not on the same property. They're about 14 miles apart. And so the burial took place this morning of General Forrest and his wife on the Sons of Confederate Veterans property at the international headquarters at Elm Springs in Columbia. And that's where the Confederate Museum is located. And that's also where the statue of Jefferson Davis that was taken down at Confederate Park on the river there in Memphis, right on the Mississippi River. They've already re-erected the Jefferson Davis statue that was taken down by the city of Memphis right outside the Confederate Museum there at SCV headquarters. So that's been taken care of. And now the next big step is the bodies of General Forrest and his wife have been reburied there. They're going to rebuild the pedestal that was over their gravesite at Forest Park in Memphis, and then eventually put the beautiful equestrian statue of General Forrest back up on top of that. So that whole area around there has been planned to look just like it did at Forest Park in Memphis, but this time on private property and not, to be controlled by the whims of government and political correctness and all the other nonsense that's tearing this country apart today.
Well, hopefully the third time will be the charm. I'll tell you, it's a damn shame, and it's a crying shame. But the fact that he has been honored and will be able to rest in peace once again without the vulgar graffiti and the disgusting graffiti that would have been visited upon him because there is no law and order in a third world city like Memphis. So you, on one hand, you hate to see him move as he rests in eternal peace. But on the other hand, if it had been my father, I wouldn't want him to be subjected to that sort of filth and degeneracy. We'll be back with Gene Andrews. We're going to bring Rich Hamblin back into the conversation. Let these two men pair up for the final segment. Stay tuned.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way. But actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Chickamauga, Chattanooga, Oklahoma, Memphis, and Tishomingo Creek, Union City, Fort Pillow, and Paducah, all the deeds of our hero bespeak. Now Athens, Sulphur Springs, and Pulaski have aroused old Sherman from his lair. For the boldest of Yankee commanders will tremble with Forrest in his rear. Here's to Forrest from the brave Tennessee. Here's to Forrest from the brave Tennessee. In our hearts he will triumph forever. Here's to Forrest from the brave Tennessee.
a great song introduced to me by Rich Hamblin just this week. And it talks about the acts of heroism. Life and death on the line with Nathan Bedford Forrest. And, of course, we've talked so many times over the years with Gene Andrews about Forrest's military acumen, his genius, how his tactics are still studied today. In fact, that's actually there on the historical marker right outside of the boyhood home. It reads, on land that was originally a Revolutionary War land grant, William and Marion Beck Forrest purchased a two-story log cabin in 180 acres, a half mile east. The Forrest family moved to Mississippi in 1833. In 1861, their oldest son, Nathan Bedford, joined the Army of the Confederate States of America. In 4 years of war, this middle-aged man rose from the rank of private to lieutenant general and rewrote the book on warfare. General Nathan Bedford Forrest's tactics and campaigns are still studied throughout the war today. That's why he's our hero. I got to admit to you, gentlemen, on the way home, we stopped by, my family did, we stopped by the Old Country Store in Jackson, which I've eaten at so many times, this little quaint southern buffet, and there, you're not going to believe it. Well, maybe you will. They now have a traveling exhibition of the sit-ins, a recreation of a lunch counter in Jackson with a chair and a little board that talks about, well, it read, they stood by sitting down. Now, this is the heroes of the opposition. We're talking about a man who was a military hero versus their heroes who would go into lunchrooms and sit down and until they bored of being a nuisance. And that's the best that those who would denigrate Forrest can put forward. It was interesting talking about how times have changed. Another gentleman at the visitation on Thursday remarked to me that the Robert E. Lee Monument in Richmond, Virginia, that land was given to the state for a dollar so long as they would promise to preserve and protect the monument. In Memphis, the land where Forrest was buried was given away for a dollar so long as they would promise to destroy it. And that's, of course, where we are, and that's the difference in just a few decades. Well, Rich Hamblin, you were on with me during the second segment of this hour, Gene in the third. I'm going to put you two men together for the remainder of this discussion before we go to Dissident Mama Rebecca Dillingham in the third hour. Rich, comment on anything you heard from Gene and then just have a conversation with Gene. I'm just going to step back here now.
Okay, glad to do it. Good to see you, Jim, Gene. As I was saying, I've been to a place where this stuff is what's going on now, and people need to understand it. I mean, we're undergoing a Bolshevik revolution now, and they're going after our heroes. They're dismantling our history, and I forgot who said the quote, but the thing that comes to mind is that there's no revolution that is so successful as one that makes the children denounce their grandparents. And that's exactly what's going on now, as you said, with that traveling lunch counter display in Jackson. I saw the same thing has happened in South Africa, and I've got several friends from South Africa. In fact, we brought Simon Roche to see the Forrest statue in Memphis before it was dismantled, and it was a highlight of his trip. I think he was very impressed with that thing. But the same thing is going on over there. And one example, which I told you, and I'll let Gene comment on it afterwards. In the Free State University in Bloemfontein, there was while we were there in our last visit, there's a statue of Martinus Steyn, who was the last president of the Orange Free State. That's the one of the two Boer republics that fought against the British conquest of their lands. And he helped found the university, and he was an upstanding man and such, but there was a tall statue of him on the campus there, and the blacks became so incensed, the communists really egged the blacks on, that the statue was removed. Well, it was removed from the Free State campus to the Anglo-Boer War Museum in Bloemfontein, which is a very nice museum. It's not infected with political correctness, and it's like a little piece of old South Africa. Well, they moved, so the big news was they were going to relocate the statue to the museum, sort of like they've relocated the Davis statue and now the Forrest statue and possibly other statues to Elm Springs. But the question is, and everybody needs to think about this hard, is what happens when they come for the museum? You know, and I think that is a very real possibility with the way things are going in this country. I know it's going to happen in South Africa. They're just inching their way toward just a total communist state down there. But we need to think about this up here. As joyous as this occasion was this weekend, and as much as the pageantry and all this kind of, and they did it very nicely, I have to admit, the attendance, I think, could have been a lot better and would have been an opportunity to reach out to a lot of people who are not associated with the STV to let them know that it even exists. I mean, but these things, I mean, it is nothing but, it's really a retreat when you get down to it. Now, the silver lining may be that the Forrest statue is no longer in the midst of Memphrica and it's on a friendly territory, but that's not going to stop them. I mean, they didn't turn out to protest today, as I understand it, or they didn't either on Thursday, but that doesn't mean they're not going to in the future. And it's, you know, the wind is under their sails, and we are, at best, we're retreating. I mean, there's just no other way to put it. I don't hate to be the cold water or the skunk at the picnic, but I mean, that's really the truth. I was fortunate enough to see the Jackson and Lee equestrian statue in Baltimore before it got torn down. When I took my son up to college in Pennsylvania, my wife at the time stopped. We actually got a photograph of it, which I don't have. I think she's got. But we stopped there. And on another occasion around 2009, I went to visit my cousin who lived in Richmond, and I was able to view Monument Row and see all the magnificent statues there. And of course, there's the Gerald Lee statue in Charlottesville where Gene and I went. That, you know, and participated in the protests there. It was turned into the Battle of Charlottesville, and all those are gone. You know, where to? I don't know. I understand they're going to cut up the Lee statue from Richmond into scrap metal. But the same thing has happened in New Orleans. It's happening all around here. It even in Nashville, we had the statue of Edward Carmack, which stood in front of the state capitol, who was a post-war governor of the state of Tennessee, and a newspaper editor who was shot down in the street. But he was a staunch defender of the South. But Antifa knocked that statue down last summer, and who knows if it's going to be put back up. And the same thing with the Forrest bus, which was in the state capitol. It's been removed. And where has it been placed? It's been placed in the State Museum, which is another story there. It's another place that supposedly reflects Tennessee history, but it's only got the Marxist version of Tennessee history.
Well, I think the only hope we have...
Tennessee history didn't start until the sit-ins.
Yeah, well,
Gene, final word to you. What's the prescription going forward?
That sit-ins, and that happened in Nashville, and they were protesting down at this. They had lunch counters at a lot of the downtown Five and Dimes, Woolworth, all of these, Harvey's, great department store downtown. So they were protesting there. My question to all these wonderful people that changed everything and brought equality and harmony, all, where are any of those today? All those businesses had to close down and just leave the downtown area because they drove off the white customers that were paying. The only ones that were left were stealing everything. And so their sit-ins destroyed our downtown businesses, downtown restaurants, and everything. It's taken over, 50 years to rebuild the downtown area of Nashville after what they did to all of that. So, yeah, that worked out really great. What's your next plan you're going to do? What else you're going to destroy? So just wanted to throw that
in.
Well,
you tell us what the plan is, Gene. If you could write the script.
The only thing, and Rich is right about this total destruction of our history and heritage, and as Dr. Samuel Francis said about 20 years ago, we're in a culture war, and we're in a war. That's it. And it's our destruction. They want us destroyed and everything about us destroyed. So all of these monuments and things that have been taken down have been on government public property, and it was supposed to be protected in perpetuity. And, of course, that doesn't mean anything to the politicians. Perpetuity is just till the next election. That's what their definition is.
Well, especially when the people change. When the people change, all of that changes. I mean, certainly there are still countless Confederate monuments in rural areas, and there's a big
that's the next point.
They're coming down
it's
to the urban
have
areas.
To be removed from these cities and put on private property somewhere. when all of this stuff blew up last year in Minneapolis and Portland and all these places, we really got concerned about the Forest Home, and we thought they were going to be coming out there to Marshall County, which is out in the countryside, and attacking the Forest Home. So that first night, we had made a few phone calls and asked some people if they wanted to come out and help us protect the Forest Home. And that first night, we had six people out there, and we did an informal inventory and counted up. We have had over 600 rounds of ammunition, shotguns, rifles, revolvers, pistols. Most disappointed people you've ever seen the next day. They never got to fire a shot because nothing happened. So,
well, you know, the thing is, we've lost our confidence. Not me, you, and Rich, but our people have lost the confidence, but we still have a great number of people out there. They just have to be motivated and animated. This thing ain't over yet, folks. This thing ain't over yet by a sight. Thank you, Rich. Thank you, Gene.
Yes, sir.
We'll be back with Dissident Mama, Rebecca Dillingham, live from Columbia, Tennessee, next.
He's a good one.